The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Welcome to Guys We Fuck,
the anti-slut-shaming podcast.
Yo, you haven't said?
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
I'm Corinne Fisher.
And I'm your fuck boyfriend.
Bring us your slutty, your horny, and your shame.
Hey, you a slut?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's talk about fucking.
What up, fuckers? How you doing? Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the Anti-Slut-Shaming Podcast. I'm Corinne Fisher.
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
Welcome to the show.
Woohoo!
All right, if you haven't done so already, you're going to want to head over to youtube.com/guyswefucked without the U in fucked.
Yeah.
It is pinned.
It was pinned,
yeah. Right?
Yeah, the whole time.
I knew it was okay. Pinned. I was like, come on. I was like, someone claimed it wasn't pinned. No shade to that person. They were looking out for us.
Yeah,
but I was just like, the amount of hours I put into posting this perfectly on YouTube.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, this was 101 to pin it.
Right.
It was pinned before it even premiered.
Right. You probably thought of it before we took the call to find out the venue where we wanted to
film. Well, the trailer was pinned. And then as soon as we had the premiere set, the premiere
that
was pinned. So
okay.
I just wanted to make sure. But anyway, head over to youtube.com/guyswefucked. Watch the special in its entirety.
Keep it on mute while you're home. I mean, you know, we just really, but also share it. Please share it with people. But share it during a time where they can actually watch it on their TV, because it's on YouTube, but you could still, everybody's got a smart TV these days. Because we worked our butts off, and it's really fucking good. And the more I read the feedback, I'm like, yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you what, all the girls in my DMs, they loved it.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. And also just a note, because my mom was unclear about this, the way the YouTube algorithm works, if you watch it in its entirety and then you go back and you watch like just the beginning, that's actually not helping us.
Oh.
Because the algorithm, some part of what it reads is how far into something someone gets.
I'm gonna have it on now.
So don't just watch like a piece of it continuously. That my mom was like, fuck. And I was like, don't worry, mom. I don't think you personally skewed the algorithm. We are fine. But I know some people, if you think that's helpful, it's not. So yeah. And then just leave a comment, like it, subscribe to our channel. All those things are super helpful. And yeah, posting your Instagram stories or, you know, anything like that is great. And
thanks,
we appreciate it.
Thanks for all the comments, guys. This is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you want to email us, it's sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. Of course, Luminary subscribers, as a reminder, get episodes a week in advance. You get 20 bonus episodes a year, and you get ad-free listening. And you get our
unwavering support and affection,
like,
because
we
like you better. And also, for these bonus episodes, a lot of them are going to be just Corinne and I reading emails that you guys have sent us, because we have hundreds of thousands, so we'll never run out.
They're and shooting the shit.
Shooting the shit and talking about our more personal stuff on those bonus episodes, because it's a more niche audience, so I feel safer to talk about what's happening with my butthole.
Yeah,
because
make no mistake, I mean, the public is still toxic. That hasn't changed in the
100%.
Past 2 years.
It never will.
Yeah, and it never will. Thank you. You are right, Mike. That's why Mike and I are on the same page. We're like, yeah, people don't change.
Ever.
And life is actually sad and hard.
That's why history exists. Because we actually keep doing the same thing over and over
That's
and over
really
again.
That's a really good point, Mike.
I know. And then we freaking forget. We get amnesia.
It's
we're
a
like,
really
wait.
Good point. So this subject line is, am I a dumb bitch for wanting to move half a world away from my perfect boyfriend?
Oh, that's, from?
That sounds like a great plan today.
Yeah.
And he's not perfect. I've been listening. We just know he's not. Like, I've been listening to
Yeah, she's right. I mean, there's no way. There's no, because no one is.
Yeah, I've been listening to Guys We Fucked since I was 19, so I feel like you two raised me to be less of a dumb bitch.
Yay.
I'm 24 now, and thank you for being sex positive, honest, and hilarious.
Thanks, girl. Thanks for sticking with us.
Long story short, I moved to Prague from California in 2019 and had no plans of staying for more than a year until COVID hit, and it became more difficult to travel and have the experiences I moved abroad for. I kept postponing moving back to the States, but I applied to graduate school this past fall, and I'm awaiting results, fingers crossed.
Yay. A year ago, I met a Czech man who is simply the best boyfriend I've ever had.
Oh, he's not American, so he might be perfect.
Yeah, I know I'm young, but he is the first person to make me feel like I'm in a real adult relationship. Well, not to press fast forward, but there is always one boyfriend who will be that boyfriend, and that doesn't make him perfect. I remember that. It just makes him monumental.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense that you're 24, though, because it's to experience that for the first time. You're like, oh, right. Wow. And then you realize, oh, you can get that with other people, too.
Wait till you're actually an adult.
Yeah, that'll be so
your
fun.
Your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25. And then your personality is pretty much solidified by the time you're 35. That's what my psychologist told me.
It takes that long? Mine's been the same since I was 6. He is considerate of, and then you go, you were a 6-year-old cunt? My answer, yes. Obviously.
In your autobiography?
You do look like
a 6-year-old cunt.
You do look like a cunt in your childhood photos, I will say.
Your pictures like
you're giving looks.
Yeah. There's a picture of me giving the Easter bunny stank eye. He is considerate of my.
I just thought that was because you were Jewish, but no, it's because you're a cunt.
No, yeah. No, I was nice. I was raised in a two-religion household, so I wasn't like anti-Christian. He is considerate of my feelings, constantly validates me. Oh, sounds like an enabler. And all my friends love him, telling me how lucky I am to have found a guy like him.
Mm, I wouldn't say that to a friend that found a good guy.
Yeah, don't trust your friends. They're usually going to be wrong. here's the problem. If I don't get into graduate school, I don't know how I can justify moving home. I feel too young to only have had one significant relationship.
You're correct.
And I know if I stay here, we will likely be together for the long haul. That's in your head. Also, my mother would kill me for permanently moving to the Czech Republic.
Well, your mom's not you, so that's good news.
Yeah. Is it selfish to break up with someone you love deeply just because you feel like there's more to life to experience?
Girl, that's your soul going, hey, listen to me.
Yeah. Yeah,
girl, that is not selfish.
It's usually the reason.
Yeah, that's like the main reason to break up with someone.
That is the most beautiful reason to break up with somebody. That is beautiful. Do you understand me? They write books about this. Do it.
If it's another reason, then things have gone too far and you're, you know, probably getting fucked over.
Yeah, well, we have raised you well.
He's brought up moving with me to the States, but I want the freedom to go alone. Yeah, you don't want to be with him anymore.
This is your gut telling you what to do.
Yeah, you want the freedom to go alone, even though I can't imagine not being with him. Think harder.
She's right though. Think outside of your narrow box in your head.
Yeah, we've made spaceships out of refrigerator boxes. You can do it.
come on. That's a clip. Can you do the timestamp thing,
yeah,
Mike?
Yeah,
thanks.
Sure,
that's
I
really
can.
Funny. This is a good one.
It's the weirdest feeling because sometimes I can envision a future with him, and other times, I mean, I also envisioned a future with Dane Cook, girlfriend.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. And I envisioned a future with Tom Cruise. Okay? So shit changes because we evolve.
And he likes dick.
Yeah. And Scientology.
Yeah.
That's the bad one.
Double whammy. Yeah. Christina could deal with dick. Yo, it was a Scientology. That was the problem.
Open. You want to fuck a dude in front of me? I'll watch it and I'll have my vibrator.
I can envision a future with him, and other times the thought of being with him forever makes me physically sick. Put that in a Hallmark card.
Eugenie was perfect in the fucking subject line. No, you just feel guilty for wanting more from out of your own life. That's what it is.
Listen,
takes one to know one, baby girl.
I'm very pro living in another country, but I gotta be honest, Czech Republic isn't on that list.
Never. No chance, man.
And I would love to go to Prague. Prague is a wonderful city for filmmaking.
Okay.
It was actually a place that I considered going to study abroad when I was in film school.
I don't mean to brag, but I just purchased a globe. Yo, I know where the Czech Republic is. It's like closer to all those other European countries. I didn't realize that. So it's kind of central.
Yeah, well, it's nearly.
It is a European country.
But there's Europe, and then there's like Eastern Europe, like Romania,
right.
where I've been.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not that far from Italy. That I thought. I would have guessed it would have been a lot further.
Yeah, no, it's not that. I mean, how much? Romania's like, what is it? Is it 11 hours to France? And I don't remember the plane ride. But yeah, it's not crazy. This is probably all sounds so silly. So feel free to roast me. We already did that.
Oh, don't worry, girl. We will. We love you.
We already did that. But I'm curious if either one of you has felt this way before. Yeah, 1,000 times.
Every time.
Every single time.
You're like, is this the one?
No. And then you're
am I going to be handcuffed to this guy for the rest of my fucking life?
And then you're like being jackhammered in a studio bedroom and you go, I don't think it's the one. I gotta be honest. I don't think this is the one.
So you know what? You did the right thing. You emailed you emailed us. Thank you. And we're here to tell you that this is your gut. This is your soul knocking on your skull going, get us out of here.
Yeah. And that wait, now and now it gets even darker at the end of this. I'm worried I'll never find someone who loves me this much. but I'm also petrified of settling down and postponing my goals when I feel like I have such an exciting life still yet to
yes,
live.
Yes. That one.
Love
that
you
one.
Both. A loyal fucker. Okay.
If you lent all your energy to your worries, your brain is not looking out for your mind. That's just what your mind does. You have to go shut the fuck up and yeah. you have to do what you want to do. It's hard and it feels scary and lonely to go into the deep abyss that is life. But sure. like you have to. Yeah. You have to.
This is so I appreciate the honesty and vulnerability in that sentence. I'm worried I'll never find someone who loves me this much because I think very few people would say that or voice that. But I think so many people do stay with a partner because the partner loves them so much. And that's better than like going out and risking it again to find something better, more powerful, more reciprocal. And so good for you for acknowledging that.
Yeah.
But that's a cowardly reason to stay in a relationship.
Right. Exactly. And why do we think that we have to stay in a relationship if the guy like we need some fight? We need him to betray us or we need to betray him or so. I feel like people are very hesitant to really put the amount of importance that actually exists on maybe there's something more out there. When this man is so nice and kind and you have a beautiful relationship, that's amazing. That's great. But now it's time to move on. You're 24. You're not going to stay with this person forever. Like, what if your life is meant to be you falling in love with these wonderful men from all over the world and having these experiences and then moving forward? And then maybe one day you have a family, maybe you don't. But, like, you're putting you and an adventure first, and I think you can't go wrong with that.
And also, like, the good thing about, like, the boyfriends you have when you're young, like they're going to move on and they're probably going to be in and out of relationships, but you will have an opportunity to reconnect if it's meant to be.
Yeah.
And I've had only one partner who I thought like I dated really early on and then I needed to go and do what you did, which was live my life and experience things for my own. And then I checked back in with him a couple boyfriends later and I just didn't feel the same way that I felt when I was first dating him. So yeah. I think you'll surprise yourself with these people who you think are perfect, you think rock your world forever, but you will outgrow them or maybe you won't. And then it's fine. And then this person will still exist. Like if that person is the one, I really, really think that you guys will come back together. So there's
it's a win-win. It's a win-win.
There's technically no risk here.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I think there's also a type of person that really prioritizes a partner or a mm-hmm. relationship as like their main
yes.
purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like you already are aware that that is not the case, at least right now.
Yeah.
If you want to go and do all these other things. So if you want to be one of those people that prioritizes like your boyfriend who you think you're going to marry and have kids with or whatever, like there are people, I mean, Curran, how many New Jersey people do we know?
I was like, you don't find them in the city, right. But they do exist and there's nothing wrong with them. But like, you know, that's why we kicked them out of the city.
Right. They're not
adventurous. They were taking up air here.
Right. Exactly.
Get out of the city. Go raise your family.
Right. So if you already know that that's not who you are, at least for right now, then I mean, I agree with
it's a Midwest mentality, which again is fine. I said it with disdain because that was my own bias creeping in.
Yes.
But there needs to be both kinds of people. We can't all be city worker people.
Right.
Right. You know? Right. 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 Yeah. Do you think, girl? You got this.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans, and yet there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Come see us live, you guys. Portland, Oregon. I'm Linnea. March 3rd through the 5th at Helium. Baltimore, Maryland. March 24th through the 26th at Magoobies. London, I'm coming to you May 12th at the Leicester Square Theater. Thank you so much for everybody who DM'd me saying I was pronouncing that wrong. There were a lot of people going, I'm so sorry if this is a dick thing to say, but you're not saying it right. Please never feel hesitant to tell me I'm not pronouncing something right. I won't pronounce things right until the day I die and I need your help.
Well, I was mad at myself because I realized that the Spice Girls say Leicester Square in a B track, and I could have obviously referenced that for you. So I apologize to you, and I apologize to the show, the listeners, and of course my girls.
Oh my God.
Okay. Yeah. So I was thinking about that for more hours than I should have this weekend. So
okay. All righty. Oh, and then I have a Patreon, patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson, where you get even more secrets. Love you. Bye.
And Fort Collins, Colorado, April 15th and 16th, four shows total at the Comedy Fort. I will be there. A lot of you got apparently it's a fucking hub over there because
nice.
I mean, people are more excited I'm coming there than when I come to Denver.
Wow.
So,
nice.
You know what? Happy to visit my favorite state once again.
And, a different town.
Yeah, it'll be great. It's like an hour away, but people already sent me people already sent me murder spots to visit.
Oh, yay.
So you guys really know
that's
me.
Sweet.
Really have spoken to me. You understand
that's so
me.
Nice.
And I will see you then with Lizzie Wolfson and maybe someone else. we'll think about it. And then Without a Country is my podcast with Shane Smith, where we fucking roast the news and talk about impending war and stuff, but we like make it fun.
Cute.
So listen to that every Saturday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yay.
And then make sure to continue rating and reviewing Guys We Fucked on Apple Podcasts. I've seen so many new reviews coming
in. I noticed that too. I'm like, and it really helps us with the charts.
Yeah, you guys have been fucking amazing with that. We appreciate it. It's good to have you back, and I know some of you have voiced that in the comments, and that's really, really cool. We also have more content when you go over to youtube.com/guyswefucked without the U and fucked to watch our special.
Yes.
We also have episodes of the Dumb Bitch Woo Hour.
Oh my God.
We
yes.
have like segments, old segments from Did That Help? Like there's a lot of content that have been concentrating on making over the past year or two on YouTube specifically, as well as clips on TikTok, which is at Guys We Fucked without the U and fucked. So you have content up the wazoo.
Yeah, we do.
All right.
Yeah. How are you, Corinne?
I'm very tired. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for the best birthday of my whole life.
Your whole life?
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, I've been doing it wrong this whole time. But one, I've
what,
never
planning it yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely not a good idea.
Yeah.
It's stressful. It's like a wedding.
So stressful. Yeah. And I'm like, that takes the joy out of it. And the last two parties I had were giant parties at this fucking penthouse hotel room thing because I was trying to, you know, kind of pettily stick it to my ex in a way, but also like, I'm my own independent woman. And it just stressed me out.
Yeah.
And so they were very fun, but I'm like, this was the best birthday I've ever had in my life.
I'm glad to
really
hear that.
I really appreciate it. And thank you. There was somebody who DM'd me because I was talking about it in the Voices in Our Heads episode where I was like, is there a way to plan a birthday party that doesn't stress you out? And the girl messaged me. She was like, yeah, ask a friend to plan it for you.
Or you can hire a party planner.
Right, right. That's for like an elaborate, for a birthday party, you think?
Yeah. My dog had a party planner.
Wow.
So yes. Oh, wow.
I think I was at that party and it was fun.
It was a really fun party. Oh, okay. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. No, because I was actually looking into hiring a party planner because that week was crazy. But then I was like, wait, I can handle this because it's only like 10 people. But yeah, no, you can do it. And then I was thinking, I was like, this party planner, like, that personality is going to annoy me. And
right,
then I'm going to
spiral. Wow.
But yeah. No, you can have a party planner. Or, I mean, that's why people, you know, have wedding planners. Because
Well, that's so stressful. Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the reason I would not even want a wedding and would just like take that money and go on vacation.
Because you wouldn't want to hand it to
a planner. Everyone is so stressed out
right.
when planning a wedding.
Right.
I'm the queen of like having incredible events, but not enjoying them myself.
Right.
So this is kind of my niche area.
You're a really good party planner.
I know.
She found like the perfect spot. It was a beautiful restaurant. The food was incredible. There was belly dancing. It was just the best. It was really fun.
Do you remember that birthday that you had where it was in like three different stages? And it was.
This is me?
Yes.
Yeah, of course, not me.
I think it was at Tommy's apartment. And you hired puppies.
Oh, yeah, the puppies.
Yeah.
That was one of the most fun parties I've ever been to.
I used to have levels of things. So
yes.
Like,
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was great.
Experience. Corinne's birthday, the experience.
Part one would be like my tier one friends, more intimate, and we would do something fun. And then tier two would be like everyone.
Yeah.
And you drink and you have, and then that's just like the masses can come. And it's someplace where you don't really care about if they like throw up or something.
Yeah, she was telling me, she's like, all right, we're gonna go on and invite your tier one friends, but have a couple tier two friends on deck in case they can't make it, because the reservation means we have to see 10 people, we can have a max of 12. And I was like, wow, I never thought about it that
yeah there's
way.
A little lying involved, you know, because you can't tell them they're tier two friends,
right.
But you just go, oh
know.
Man, I just decided to have a birthday party last minute.
Yeah
it's been planned for weeks.
I was gonna keep it low-key this year.
it was by far the best birthday I've ever had.
Well, I'm glad.
Truly, thank you so much.
And serendipitously, I felt like, you know, I feel like the universe gives you signs. And at the end of the dinner, the server came over and said, oh, I didn't want to say anything like while you were in the midst of your party, but I'm a really big fan of Guys We Fucked. And I was so excited when I saw that it was going to be you and Christina here.
Oh, that's
so shout
so
out
nice.
To Brianna. Hello.
Yeah.
What up, Brianna?
And the place was called Casa La Femme?
Mm-hmm.
Casa La Femme or De Femme?
No,
La Femme, again. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. West Village. Highly recommended. It's a beautiful restaurant. I, you know, I've been on this self-improvement train for a while. And I want to read last episode. We asked the listeners who had experience being a member of an abusive relationship, physically, mentally, and or both. And so we got a lot of emails that I had forwarded to my friend who was also there, who's had somebody who was experiencing this. And there was a woman who DM'd me this article. It's a blog post that she wrote. It's beautiful, and I really want to read this. She explains. I'm just going to read this, okay? By Danielle Norkin. It's on Elephant Journal. We'll post the link. I'll send it to you. I'll put it in the description of the podcast if anybody wants to reference it for later. But it's how to help somebody who isn't ready to be saved from domestic violence. It'll never happen again. You're the only one I've ever acted this way towards. I'm so sorry. I never wanted to hurt you. You are abusive to me too. You deserve that. Maybe if you didn't frustrate me so much. He punched me, but it would never happen again, in quotes. He smashed my head against the car window, but I drank too much and I didn't know what I was doing. He squeezed my body with all of his strength until I yelped out in pain, but quote, I had to teach you a lesson. He choked me in my sleep, but come on, it was only for a few seconds. I didn't want it, but, quote, you're my girlfriend, shut up, and he held me down. Domestic violence is prevalent, but recognizing it can sometimes be difficult, and there are many misconceptions about it. Likely someone you know is experiencing some form of it right now. Many people may be hesitant to speak out, fearful of being judged or that no one will understand. And sometimes you cannot rescue a friend from domestic violence, and they may not want to be saved. At times, they just want someone to hear them, to be understood, and to feel as if someone is sympathetic of their predicament. People stay in abusive relationships for a multitude of complex reasons, so it's important not to be judgmental, which was my problem in talking about it. I know this is hard to do, and I know it's hard to understand. It's reasonable for anybody to want to take drastic measures when we find out that someone we care about is being abused. We may feel compelled to confront the abuser so that we can save our loved one from any more pain. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, and furthermore, doing so can be dangerous. The result of such an interaction is often that the victim is blamed and they experience retaliation at the hands of their abuser more severely than usual. In some cases, trying to save a victim of abuse is like trying to save a drug addict. You can try and try, but your hands are tied until they are ready to accept your help. Seeing the abuse and not being able to stop it may cause you severe mental strain. So make sure to create healthy boundaries around the situation and keep your wellness intact. This will be beneficial in the long run for when the victim is ready to be helped. The point is that it is okay to express concern for someone you believe is being abused, but also make sure that even if you aren't ready to leave, or even if they aren't ready to leave, you are offering support, empathy, and patience. Be their rock, someone who is approachable and won't judge them, and you may be saving someone's life. Help to create a safe space for the person to talk, to visit, or to spend the night. A place where the judgment is tossed aside and you're just there to listen. If the person expresses a desire to leave their relationship, help them to devise a safety plan and be a resource for them within that safety plan. Those who are being abused sometimes find it hard to imagine how they can leave the relationship, but reassure them that it can be done successfully and, more importantly, that it can be done safely. Survivors need to be reminded that there is life after abuse, a good life, a new beginning. This is my story. It was merely 1 month into our relationship when he hit me for the first time. What followed was that I engaged in a dangerous mental process that allowed the cycle of abuse to maintain its momentum. My eyes would glaze over. I'd disassociate, shake it off, forget it. If he did apologize, it was never just I'm sorry. There was always justification, manipulation, and gaslighting. I was kept in a place of vulnerability, and he maintained the power. Every time it happened, I would move further and further outside of my own body and my own mind. I was detached and depersonalized, just an observer who was watching my life happen and not truly feeling anything. If I allowed myself to feel, it would be too painful to bear, and I didn't want to or know how to face that reality. So instead, I forgot. It was the only way I knew how to cope. There is a complexity within domestic abuse, domestic violence, that we need to be aware of. It's what I experienced, and it's why I stayed. I became severely mentally ill within this relationship. I was too ill to understand what was happening and to make sense of it. And for 2 years, I didn't realize I was being abused. I was suffering from anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, night terrors, hair loss, and I was diagnosed with a hormonal disorder caused by extreme levels of stress. Even though all of these conditions seemed completely unexplainable, the reason was right there in front of me. I was so messed up and disassociated, I would obsessively check my pulse throughout the day to make sure I was alive. Many of these manifestations continue to this day. During the relationship, I lost parts of myself that had once given me strength, courage, and character. His abuse made me the most mentally ill I've ever felt in my life. Yet he was the only one who could also make me feel better. He had the power, all of it. I never thought I was capable of allowing someone to have that sort of control over me. I had always felt safe within my mind, my place of solace, but he stole that from me too, and I felt my mind could no longer keep me protected. You see, the abuse I experienced did not always leave physical marks. This is why it's so important not just to look for bruises and scars when we suspect abuse, but to look for mental changes too. It has been years since I left him, but he continues to maintain control over my relationships, my friendships, my job, my well-being, my body, and my education. My history of being abused always lingers and may never be the same. I now hold back when I laugh, when I speak, and when I love. I don't think I am as beautiful as I once was, and I will likely never trust anyone fully. There will always be a serious sadness I cannot shake and a sadness I cannot escape. I will likely continue to have moments of severe mental pain that disable me completely that I will choose to experience in the dark. But I don't want to hide this part of myself anymore. This is the reality, the truth of what an experience like this may do to somebody. I accept that this part of my healing, after the relationship ended, I tried to dodge the healing process through alcoholism, compartmentalization, and escapism. But since then, I've been able to achieve a level of clarity. Slowly but surely, I am healing and moving forward. And honestly, at times, the process of healing feels harder to get through than the abuse itself. But while it can be emotionally brutal and sometimes physically painful, it is necessary. This is a time where we can be immensely helpful to a friend recovering from abuse. Help them to reconnect with friends and family they may have been disconnected from due to isolation. Participate in an activity with them that they may have enjoyed in the past but lost sight of during the abuse. Help them integrate healthily back into their lives and feel safe once again with their own mind. When I saw him for the last time, I confronted his abuse. I was trembling, not sure if he would hurt me one last time, but instead he began to whimper and beg, "Please don't tell anyone. I don't want people to think I am a monster." And for a long time, I didn't tell anyone. I've been protecting him, but he is a monster and I refuse to think anything more of him. I am done protecting him and instead I am ready to protect and heal myself. I wanted to read that because I thought that was a pretty full-fledged account of somebody who was in a situation they didn't ever think that they could find themselves in, and then who was living with themselves now in a much more healthy environment. I think with child, I really related to some of the stuff that you were saying in terms of the disassociating. That's what it is. And that's why you can feel really lonely. And one of the reasons why I wanted to read that specifically now, going from like, I had the best birthday party ever, to here's this thing about, you know, a really deep dive into physical abuse, physical mental abuse, is bettering yourself and healing yourself doesn't feel good a lot of the times, and it feels really scary and it's very lonely, but you owe it to yourself, like that girl that wrote us the email, you owe it to yourself to go forward anyway. I just promise you, that's what I wish somebody would have told me. I wish someone would have told me that it hurts to heal yourself, because if I would have known that, I would have, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know it now. And so if you don't know it now, I just wanted to say, please know that being a better person, healing from childhood trauma, healing from sexual abuse, healing from emotional abuse, it's well worth it, but it's going to feel painful. And to make sure you nurture yourself and have good friends in your life. The end.
Yeah, life is about getting better getting worse before it gets better, for sure. Yeah. That's why I always like made fun of like it gets better, because I go, does it?
It's gonna get better, then it's gonna get bad, and then it's peaks and valleys.
Yeah, to say that it gets better and it stays better, I think is like a lie.
It is,
and I don't like to lie to people.
That's a very dangerous lie. So, I really do believe.
Yeah, because then you keep waiting for the better, yeah. And then you go, well, it got better for a second, and then it actually got worse.
And when it gets worse after the better, you think, oh, everything I've done was bullshit and didn't matter, but that's just not true.
Yeah, so I think it's like those low points of bad will get better. So like whatever that thing that you're going through, that will get better, and then something else will happen, but you'll also get through that. That's the honest truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you'll get murdered or something. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. Well, but yeah. That was your destiny, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Might be mine. Certainly people would love to do
it. I sure hope not.
Well, it would be I like to go out with a bang. That's the big closer. I get murdered.
Perfect end to the autobiography. I was a 6-year-old cunt.
Wait, if you get murdered,
if you get murdered,
you have to haunt me.
Okay.
You have to.
Okay,
please.
I'll haunt you.
But don't get murdered. I'd rather that not happen.
Yeah, I mean.
But you gotta.
Houdini didn't get murdered, but that is the pact that he made with his wife, that he would haunt her.
It's very sweet.
But guys, so I can't write the end of my autobiography if I get murdered, so you guys are gonna have to make sure it gets finished.
I'm taking a master class on creative writing from Margaret Atwood, so I'm gonna fucking nail it. Yeah.
Oh, I watched that one too.
It's really good.
That's a good one. That's first one I watched on Masterclass.
Yeah. Oh,
love Masterclass. All right,
you know
guys.
Else I love?
Our guest today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She is an actress and a comedian. I was a fan of her before we even knew each other, so it's cool that we're friends now. She's co-creator and star of the comedy series Alone Together, and she plays Izzy on the Hulu series Dollface. Her comedy special, Hot for My Name, is streaming now on Paramount Plus. Please welcome to the show Esther Pavitsky.
It's raining outside and inside my mind, I'm drowning as I close my eyes. 'Cause you got something I know I see. Without you, it feels like you're all I need, all I need. All I need. All I need, all I need, all I need, all I need. 'Cause you got something I know.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we are here with stand-up comedian Esther Pavisky. We're so excited to have you back.
Oh my God, you guys are my favorite people.
Wow. You're the best. Thank you.
Soundbite, clip it.
Yeah. You have a fiancé?
Yes, I do have a fiancé.
You also have like really cool television shows that you're doing, but you mentioned the fiancé.
Who really
it's all
cares?
About love, right?
Yeah, no, I've been engaged for 4 years. And
oh, shit.
All my friends are like, Esther, when is the wedding? And I like really have to look within, like, why is there not a wedding yet? And a friend of mine this weekend was asking me all the questions, and I think I figured it out. I think that being married symbolizes like you're a grown up and like mm-hmm. you're, and I'm afraid of that. I like not being married.
Right.
But you like being engaged because you really wanted to get engaged. I remember that.
You do like being engaged. I see it in your face.
Because I was so insecure that he was going to leave me at any time. So it was like I needed that commitment. And now that I got that version of the commitment, I'm like, okay, that's enough. Like, I'm good.
You could have like a really childlike wedding if you wanted to. Like a fanciful wedding, like an Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, nothing
wedding.
Weird about that.
Yeah. That's probably what I would do if I had a wedding.
A lot of pedophiles crashing that one.
But I know what you mean, because I remember do you remember when you stopped liking Barbie dolls or like doll, like children's toys? Because I felt it leaving me, and I'm like, no, I don't want to be boring and sad.
You know what I remember one time, like I would always beg my parents to play with me, and like they never would, which we can say that for another time. But I remember like finally my mom was like, okay, I'll sit and do Legos with you. And then I remember I felt like, oh, I don't want to do like make-believe stuff with my mom anymore. Like, yeah. This is like embarrassing.
Yeah. And it's just you and your mom and you're embarrassed. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's funny that you bring that up, because your parents are like on the older side for your age, right?
My dad is, but not my mom.
Your mom isn't. Okay. Because yeah. Your dad's like 78, you said on your Instagram story.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought it was interesting. But that's so funny you bring that up, because one of the main reasons I don't want to have kids is because I hate playing. And I don't want to be a parent that doesn't play, because right. It's fucked up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's
so
fair.
Do you really not want kids?
Oh yeah. I mean, sure. Yeah, she does.
Both of you are.
I would absolutely have kids. I have to meet somebody I like enough to want to procreate with them, but yes.
I'm in a weird position where last year I had a miscarriage mm-hmm. and now I don't know what I want.
Oh, that swayed how you feel about children.
Yeah. Because I was facing, and I really wanted to have it, like when I was pregnant.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's super common.
But like, what a roller coaster.
Totally.
Right? Like,
totally. Whew. Like, and I'm sorry. Like, I know that even the topic can be triggering for people. But
we got to talk about it, though. We should be talking about this as often as it gets brought up, because it's not as known that it's a common thing. And I feel like I don't know if mental preparation or like understanding that this is very likely to happen would help ease the pain that comes along with a miscarriage, but I do know that more women experience them than don't.
Like half my friends miscarried on their first when the first time they got
pregnant. And so it's
everyone
almost like
says
it's
that.
Almost like
Yeah, when you're 12, 100%. You get your period. You know, when you start to try to have a baby, you will likely have a miscarriage. Like, it seems like that's how likely it is.
Especially because, like, we're starting to have kids older. You know, I'm 33. Like, but just because it's common doesn't mean that it's not so traumatic.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So true. Like, I knew to expect it, and it still was very, very traumatic. But now I'm so far on the other side of it where I'm like, wait, like, now I don't even know what I want anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, wait, can you walk us through? Do you mind?
No.
Or I don't want to, like, pull you down. But how far along, like, what was it like to find out you were pregnant? Like, what? Take us through it.
Well, I got pregnant really quick when we tried, and I was so happy and excited. And, you know, we were really excited. And it was around, like, just before the 3-month mark. We had already, keep in mind, this was not, like, very early on, like, I was pregnant for 3 months.
Wow.
We told our friends. Ugh. We told our family.
Yeah.
Because
what's the mark where you typically don't tell friends and families?
I don't remember, but I want to say it's around 3 months, and we might.
Yeah, because you're supposed to do first. You have supposed trimester. To get past the first trimester.
Yes.
Because that's you're in the danger zone.
Exactly.
But most people will tell their close friends and family before that, because that is such a long time.
Exactly. Right. And like,
that's
I was,
a big secret to sit on.
Yeah.
And you're so excited about it. Like, you want to talk about it.
Totally. It's really hard, and you don't, like, expect to lose it, you know,
because
you're in that mode. And, like, we had just gotten an interior designer, like, we were, like, getting we were, like, making plans. And I was just a few days away from writing to the show Dollface that I'm on, like, writing the producers, like, hey guys, like, I'm gonna be right, you know. But so we went in for whatever week checkup it was, and a lot of people don't know this because I just did Bert Kreischer's podcast, and he was like, so when you had a miscarriage, like, did you feel it? Did it just happen? And it made me remember, like, whoa, most people don't know.
Yeah.
Most miscarriages are technically called missed miscarriages. So you don't know that you've miscarried, like, until you go in for a checkup.
There's no bleeding?
Nothing.
Wow.
So you go in.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, they basically just tell you, like, party's over. There's no more heartbeat.
I hope they say it
like
that.
They say it exactly like that. And then they streamers come out like, sorry, next time.
And, like, I was pregnant at the same time as, like, three good friends of mine. So, like, that also was, like, added trauma.
And they're like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then the, like, thing that was really annoying, which is probably also why I'm questioning what I'm doing, is for the future, because I always told myself, look, if we lose this one, we're going to try again right away. Cut to, the doctor goes, by the way, the kind of miscarriage you had is called a partial molar pregnancy. You can't try again for 6 months to a year because it's dangerous.
Okay.
Like, for whatever reason, like, that's just how it works.
Didn't even know that was a thing.
Same.
The
so
fuck,
I was just,
man,
like, are you kidding? Like, what? I was
Could you read what's the type of miscarriage it was again?
Partial molar pregnancy.
Partial
it's very
molar.
Rare.
I've heard of it, but I didn't know that that's what it meant, that you couldn't try again.
Depending on how, what version of it you have,
sure.
6 months to a year, you have to wait.
Do miscarriages just happen for a reason? Like, you know, not like a godlike reason, but like a medical, like,
yes,
Esther,
absolutely.
Because Esther wasn't married yet. That's why.
Oh, shit. Esther, you really no.
No, absolutely. It's like a fluke, the chromosomes, whatever. It just didn't work out.
Okay.
And it's like, which is mostly why
so
a miscarriage happens.
A mother, you know, you couldn't blame it on yourself if you tried,
no.
Right? Like, it's not nutrition, it's nothing.
Hell no.
Yeah, it's just a freak thing.
Because you have to get a surgery. Like, I had to have an abortion.
Oh.
So when they do that, they test what they take out, and then that's how
they
tell
you. Give you more sufficient answers.
Yeah, so then it's like, okay, it definitely was not my fault. Because in my head, of course, I'm like, oh my God, I took so many hot baths. Like, you just are like, what did I do? But thank God it was not my fault this time.
Can it ever be the woman's fault unless you're like,
let me go
sledding down a dangerous
right
hill.
Like, if you like 87 roller coasters,
yeah, let's
and like
start wrestling
chain smoke.
I'm gonna get into MMA, you know?
yeah then
even then, who knows,
right?
We're very strong.
Yeah,
but yeah. And so I did Google, though, because I was like, because my thing is, I always like to know when celebrities have experienced something that I experienced. Like, before I started.
It's comforting.
Before I started taking Lexapro, I researched all the celebrities who are antidepressants.
That's so sweet.
And Kristen Bell. I was like,
oh,
okay.
I love her. She's got a great energy.
And Alanis Morissette had a miscarriage just like mine. Very cool.
Very cool.
Alanis Morissette, yeah, she loves. I think almost the universe makes traumatic things happen to her
so
she
can
sing
a
better
it.
Song.
And so that we all can heal from our own shit.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Alanis. Thanks for taking
it's
over
a big
the team,
Alanis,
girl.
Pro Alanis podcast.
But yeah, so, and then I, like, after that, after the surgery that I had to have, I had some complications and like a lot of bleeding, and I was in so much pain, and I took a hydrocodone, which I'm like a baby.
Is that a pain killer?
Yeah, it's like an opiate. It's not good.
You had a surgery. These are the moments where you take them.
Exactly.
Right. And you just be mindful because, you know, the opioid epidemic or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. But I took it, the pain went away. And I was like, oh my God, I love how this feels. I've never felt anything like this. And I told my guy friends that, and they were like, whoa, Esther, no, don't do that. They're like, you need weed. What you want is weed. And so that's how I ended up starting to take edibles. Ah. And I got a little crazy overboard with them, but now I'm in a more normal place. But
yeah, that happens.
So that's,
like, this is the best feeling ever.
That's how my miscarriage made me a drug addict.
Nice. A love story.
Nice.
Starring Esther Babisky.
Now, you were saying that you and, are we allowed to see your fiance's name?
Yeah.
You and Dave planned to have a kid. What did this discussion look like? Or was there one, or were you just like romantically gazing into one another's eyes one night, like, let's make a baby?
That's fun.
I think there was really there's like no clear answer to that, because it was more like, you know, he's older than me, he's 43, mm-hmm. and it was kind of just like people around me were having babies, you know, it was kind of like, we should,
I was just catching on.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it.
It was kind of like that. But I'm not a person certainly who like grew up always wanting to be a mother. Like, I feel like you guys.
I did. But then I grew up and I was like, yeah. And then for a while I didn't want kids, but now I'm back on board with the idea of having them, because I had to fix up here first.
What about, like, I never fantasized about a wedding or children. Did you, like?
I used to as a kid, but now I do because I realize, oh, we can make our own rules and say fuck everything traditional if we wanted to. So the idea of customizing a celebration like that is very exciting. Mm. But I'm single, so like I you know, these thoughts float in, float out.
I had a Barbie. I don't know if you remember, like, if this is like the same age group, but Toys R Us used to make these incredible hot pink Barbie boxes, and each one would have a costume in it. And it was like, dress up was very big when I was a kid, like, so, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And one of them was a Barbie wedding dress, and I did love getting in it and like walking down the stairs. But what I loved about a wedding wasn't finding love. I go, yeah, this is awesome. It's a fucking day about me. And so that always resonated with me. I was like, you get a dress. Everyone gives you shit.
Everyone looks at you and thinks you're the most beautiful girl in the world.
Speeches about how great you are. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the best. But so, and that's how I thought of it.
How it can be.
Yeah. And then when I grew up and realized that that's not really what a wedding was about.
There's another person involved.
Yeah. I got disinterested. I've never wanted kids though. Even as a child, like, I used to talk about wanting to adopt kids, but I've never wanted to have my own kids.
Interesting. Yeah. Is that version of a wedding that you thought of, is that like what inspired your guys' special? Because I love that I love the intro.
That
your
was
special.
More thanks.
Petty, being petty.
Yeah,
is how
yeah.
that started.
It 100% did. It was more like other people that we used to love. Were
getting
married
to others.
And then so we were like, we wanted to overshadow them.
Yeah. In the city they were getting married at. But, you know, the time factor proved us. We're like, yeah, you know, we'll do it in Salem. We won't take out a billboard the same day of their wedding. We'll do it in Salem.
Yeah. That was really the original inspiration for that. And then we tweaked it a bit.
Oh, my God. I love when pettiness, like, can
lead to gold.
Yes. Like, when use it to inspire your vision.
Sure.
Yeah, it's great.
It feels great.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to have anything to do with who you're being petty towards.
No, because they don't deserve your energy anyway. You're just having fun with yourself. Yeah.
Just give you the motivation.
Petty. I literally, like, have a joke about how the reason I haven't committed suicide is because I'm being petty and I want to stay around to ruin people who hate me's lives.
Yes.
And I think, like, whatever is keeping you alive, just lean into that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You don't, it doesn't have to be because life is a gift and people are going to be sad if you're gone. That doesn't sound like a reason for me to stay around. That sounds like a you guys issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're not wrong.
You know?
In that you're right.
You know, like, I'm sorry, I'll make other people sad. That's why I want to kill myself, because you guys are making me sad.
So you've always fantasized about a wedding, Esther?
Never.
Oh.
Like, literally never.
Oh, okay.
Never.
Just an engagement.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
It was more the commitment aspect of it, which I get.
Yeah, that was just when I met Dave, and I was like, I just was so afraid of losing him because I always get broken up with. And really? I just wanted to prevent that.
Do people give you a reason? Is there like a consistent complaint that you get in relationships?
No, but you know what? All of my relationships before Dave were before the age of 23. So I think that's enough said. Crazy young girl kind of thing.
Or just like not knowing what you want, or like not knowing yourself as well as you do now, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then what was it about Dave when you met him that clicked?
Just like a healthy, evolved person. Like,
wow.
Like everyone, I love my ex-boyfriends, but like Dave is great.
Dave's your level. Dave's at your speed. Dave, yeah.
Yeah. Dave, he hates when I say this so much, but I feel like he kind of like re-raised me. Like he's so.
I can see why he doesn't like that.
Esther, I'm not your dad.
Not a good rumor around Hollywood.
But like my parents, my upbringing was so chaotic and like unhealthy.
Yeah.
And
he could gently guide you into like into this other path. Yeah, I totally get what you mean.
I'm just envisioning Esther telling the story of her and Dave's romance. It's like, have you heard about Celine Dion and Renee and how they met?
That is gold. Come on.
Well, I was 12 and I was good at singing.
Raise me, Papa. I mean, honey.
So what kind of a set? I don't think I know, like, obviously, I'm guessing you met in an entertainment-based setting because you're both in the business.
But is he an actor?
He's a writer. I met him at a party.
Oh, writer. Cool.
I know. I literally was at this house party that I randomly went to, and I saw him across the kitchen, and I remember thinking, oh my god, that guy's so hot, I'm gonna stay away from him because I didn't want to like
get broken up again.
I didn't want to embarrass myself. And then later on in the night, he was in like a circle talking to people that I knew, and I was like, fuck it, I'm going up there.
Good.
And I at the party,
your body knows too when you're attracted to somebody. That's why fuck the apps. You know, you knew from across the room, your vagina probably was like bum 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 bum. You're like, I must talk to that man.
Totally.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. And I remember I was holding a bowl of candy because I was like, I was so uncomfortable at the party. I was like, I'm just gonna hand out candy.
That's nice.
So I walked up to the group and I was like, hey, does anyone want candy? And then thankfully, like, the mutual friends like introduced everybody, and I just like immediately was like, so like, what's up? And I was like, hey, you want to go sit down and talk? And like, it's so funny because the other day I said, I've never been hit on by a hot guy. And Dave was like, what are you saying about me? And I was like, you didn't hit on me.
Right. You hit on him.
I pursued you.
Yeah.
And then we talked for a while. He left the party without saying goodbye. I was so pissed off. And I went and did a set that night. And I was like, guys in LA are such assholes. Like, I hate Ben. And then the next day he like hit me up on social media. And I was like, yes.
Guys are the best and they're so great and we should love them more.
I am the
same
way.
That's kind of like a cool power move though. Like, that's a good move to leave without saying goodbye or getting your number and then to hit you up the next day, like to make you want it a little bit more. Ooh.
I don't know if that's what he was thinking, but it is in theory a really good tactic.
He's so not a game player, so I know that it wasn't, but
I was like, knowing what I know about him and like the brief interactions I've had, I was like, I don't think that was his plan. I think he was like just tired and wanted to go home. But which I also love. That's a great energy. That's what I look for in a man. Someone who wants to leave a party is like, that's why like one of my favorite exes, like we just loved leaving parties, and that was our love language.
Aww.
Just leaving parties together.
That's very
leaving
sweet.
Early.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
I love that. Okay. So
that's, you started dating, soon after that?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then here we are.
Yeah.
Nine
years
later.
So you got engaged. Did you, I always wonder how it works, like with couples, like do you say like, I would get married to you or whatever? Like, how, do you kind of drop hints? Do you have a full on discussion about it?
Keep in mind that I was literally desperate for him to propose to me. From the moment we met, I was absolutely insane. I made it very clear.
I love that you lean into it. That's great. I'm going to start leaning into that.
I was a crazy person.
And this didn't scare him off in any way?
I mean, he didn't like it.
Okay.
He did not
like it. But he didn't
like
hate it.
All right.
But, you know, I think like I had growing up to do, and I was such a crazy person. Like, I kind of like secretly like was mad at him because he wouldn't say that he wanted to marry me, and he wouldn't, because,
but you met him when you were like 24, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically like I just had the growing up to do, and like eventually like it was time. And you know, we also had to go to couples therapy like a couple times throughout, which I know that he doesn't like, he, you know, he's a little more private. But I'm a very big advocate for couples therapy.
Yeah. And well, and how other couples go, I think this is something I'm going to try, is they hear it from somebody, like somebody they look up to or somebody they respect, or they just hear it and they hear a person talk about it. Like, it's not a big deal and it really helped us. And it,
yes.
That's it, how you help others.
And it's not like we had some do or die issue. It was just like, oh, like we keep having the same argument.
Sure.
Like,
yeah. It's great to get a referee every once in a while. And Oh my God.
It is. It was such a game changer. Like, and it gave us communication tools.
Wow.
And especially me, because I was a crazy person.
You say you, so you keep saying that. What do you mean by that?
I just mean like I was pushing and begging for him to marry me.
You were just
like
very
literally,
thirsty.
Literally,
yeah. Thirsty. But you were literally like, Dave, like, I'll marry you. Like,
I don't.
What
think
did
it was
you say?
It was like a running. I remember it being like a running thing, like yeah. almost a like bit. A joke, but it wasn't a joke because she was serious.
Yeah.
And so, I, oh, you were playing it off like, why you marry me, you prick? Seriously, do it.
I don't even remember, but I do feel like I tortured him a little bit, and also he tortured me by okay. not proposing.
Right.
So
right.
But well, you won. I mean, you
yeah.
won.
Yes. You won in the end. Do you remember anything that the couples counselor gave you in terms of like communication tools for your toolbox that you? That really were the game changers?
I don't specifically, but what I will say was there was something about having that third person there that opened us both up.
Wow.
To like really communicate how we felt. And uh-huh. I don't, it, if it's just like, oh my God, we, you know, this is a safe space. Nobody's going to jump yeah. on you. Nobody's.
And this person, this professional is dedicated to helping you guys reach that point of understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nice. It feels like you can play a game of telephone almost, because you can like be wanting to talk to your partner, but you're going to say it to the therapist.
Exactly. Right.
But also, it feels safer.
When it's a couples counselor, because I did see a couples therapist with my ex, and I'm really glad we did it. But do you have, part of me forgets about this part. Like, because when I see an individual therapist, I got it. Like, the first three appointments are just backstory. Like, did you have to do that for you guys, or could you get right into it right away?
I think maybe a little bit of backstory. We ended up seeing a therapist who I had worked with previously, because I did, I went to this like eating disorder program like years back. It was called the Bella Vita. I think it closed, but it was like a 8 hours a day, 30 day, almost like kind of
oh, wow.
rehab,
yeah.
but like just like, so I met that therapist through there, and in that program on Saturdays, like you would bring like a family member. And so Dave would come. So
oh, that's nice.
We kind of knew the therapist a little bit,
yeah.
you know, so that was helpful.
It's familiarity there.
Yeah.
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 Nice.
That therapist. So the therapist does relationships and eating disorders, just like all.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's related.
Yeah. Well, I think also it was like, we just wanted someone that we kind of knew. So mm-hmm. we were like, maybe this isn't her specialty, but we're going to try to. And she ended up being great. So.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
How long did you go? Or like you said, you went different periods
of time.
I feel like
throughout the last like 10 years, we've probably gone in like three, in like maybe we've gone for like a couple months, three times.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Got
so just it. Like a little bit of, yeah, like keeping it.
Maintenance.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. And I think that's good.
That is good. So could I ask what could we, if you don't mind going back to this, the miscarriage, you
yeah.
had the surgery. Like what were the things that you were experiencing? Like what were the ebbs and flows like of getting the news and then having a surgery? Was the surgery similar? You said it's similar to the abortion one where it's like a vacuum type object
yeah.
goes up.
Okay. Yeah. So I was completely under.
Okay.
And yeah, they just like take everything out. And I, to be honest, the thing that was bothering me the most was that weekend I was supposed to surprise my childhood best friend for her birthday.
Yeah.
So I just like was so annoyed that this surgery was getting in the way of that. And also dealing with the doctors of like, oh, well, we can't get you in then, you know. And I just remember being like, I can't believe this is happening to me. Like, I'm on hold with like three different doctor's offices. I'm like begging people. And also
ugh.
The doctor's office where I did all this, they were such assholes.
Really?
I like,
are you fucking, wow.
No. And it was so, this will actually make your blood boil. Like, basically, the office was like, we can't do it for, because I wanted to get this. Once you find out.
Yeah, get it out of me now.
Get it out
yeah,
now.
I don't, yeah.
Oh, I have yeah. to wait? Excuse
yeah.
me, you're telling me I have to wait 2 weeks? Like,
two
fuck
weeks.
No, this is like miserable. And
two weeks.
It's just like the mental
sure,
stress
sure, sure.
of like what?
God, women are so not taken care of emotionally, mentally, and physically in any stage of a pregnancy, no matter how it goes.
So
it's terrible.
I have this doctor's office where there's like two doctors that I had been seeing there, and they're both giving me the runaround about getting this surgery done. And I'm like, guys, like, please, like, is there anything, whatever? So I'm like, okay, I need to just, I'm like, I'm desperate. I want to go to my best friend's thing. I want to get this out of my body. And so I texted a couple of my girlfriends who are famous and was like, nice. Hey, do you guys have a doctor? Like, because I, at this point I was like, I'll pay whatever price.
Yeah.
Who's, give me the fanciest person in town who will make it work, which is immense privilege, but just wait. So Whitney Cummings and Olivia Munn give me the same doctor. I text him. I talked to him. He's so nice to me. He's like, I can't do it because I just, for my schedule, he's like, let me call the office that you, I know them. Cause I didn't know this, but this guy was like a high level doctor. And a couple hours later, I get a voicemail from the other doctor that's like, oh, I didn't know you were so well connected.
Oh. What the fucking shit?
Welcome to my Hollywood.
Because you know Olivia Munn and Whitney Cummings, you could get your fetus that was miscarried out of your body quicker.
I can't believe you're surprised. What, of course you can. Fuck?
I was with you. Because
you could get someone murdered if you wanted to, I'm sure. I know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know. But that the balls of that fucking shitbag doctor.
And the fact that he didn't hide it. He didn't hide it.
He said you're well connected?
Fuck you,
piece of shit.
Life is different. That's why I talk. That's what we talk about in a culture where we talk about male privilege or white privilege. I really feel celebrity privilege is stronger than any privilege that exists.
Oh my God, that is so fucked.
And I'm obsessed with it as a theory. I'm obsessed with it. Being a celebrity is a race. It truly is. It's a race beyond white, black, anything. Like, it's its own race.
You get it, and
it looks down on all the other races.
Wow. And I'm so grateful that my friends were there to help me. But for the doctor,
you learned a truth about humanity at that experience, though. Holy hell!
For the actual doctor to say that to me was like, me and Dave were just like, is this guy kidding me?
Oh,
like,
my
I don't even
God.
Want him to do the surgery on me. Right. And then all of a sudden they like made a 7 a.m. appointment for me the next a couple days. It was I was so grateful that my friends helped me, but I was like, this is fuck you. I fucking,
and you know what though, I feel like too, when you're telling that story, like they were giving you the runaround, but probably a part of you probably fucking knew that they could squeeze you in if they gave a shit enough.
Totally.
So it's like, all right, fine, let me grasp at straws for whatever the fuck you're gonna give a shit enough about, famous people, so I can go carry on with my life.
And it just like made me so angry for any woman that has to have this go. To me, I'm
not
like,
cared
why,
for
why
at
is
all.
The system not, oh shit, you have a miscarriage, you need an abortion, this is an emergency, we're going to get it out right now.
Yeah, we care about your mental health. We understand that it's a taxing on you to be carrying this around with you.
But
in your
also,
body.
It seems like there's not enough providers if this is so, because it's just not something, I don't know if it's like not lucrative. I mean, that's usually the reason in medicine. Mm,
right.
Or like, what's the reason? Because I mean, to think or to believe in any way that healthcare is based on like needs or empathy is just, it's
not
just
at all.
Untrue.
Oh my God.
It's based in money, of course.
Oh my God.
And doctors in LA and California, it is not like that in Chicago where I'm from. Like when I grew up, the doctors, I just feel like I'm surrounded by doctors who want to be celebrities. And I'm like, I hate it. I still will I'll still go back home to Chicago to do some doctor's appointments when I can, because I just like, it's
the vibe there.
I hate it. And like, you want to be famous.
Your ego is ruling your life. And that is disgusting. It's not human. Like you're grasping at this fake power.
Ugh.
I follow a lot of Botox and filler providers who are doing more TikToks, and I go, you know how many people you could have injected in the time that you did that TikTok?
It's counterproductive. Yeah, but they're going the Philip Morris route. They're trying to target the youth so that they're, you know, they make those Botox appointments earlier.
But it is also about, it's about them wanting to be a celebrity. And then just like, you know, LA is a bunch of people who like, some of you are making it, but the ones who aren't are still trying in other directions.
Dude, what a mind fuck that must have been through.
Yeah, it sucked. It was, but it's gone. It's,
great.
The remains are gone.
Yeah.
I like that. You talk about it like a zombie now.
Yeah. Was it painful? Was the, how was the recovery? Was there a recovery after the surgery?
It was pretty normal. I mean, you just have to take it easy. And then there was just one night where I did too much walking when I wasn't supposed to, and my podcast co-host Kalila was who she went to nurse. I know she loves you guys. She was kind of my guide of like, okay, you gotta stop walking. You just had this surgery because she's had a couple abortions herself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was my pro on it, and it was just that one night where I did too much, and I was like on the floor. Oh my god, I'm in so much pain, and then that's when I became a drug addict.
Right, right, right. Yeah. I mean, America, baby, that is the most America fucking story I've ever heard. The whole from start to finish is just like, oh my god.
I
was just gonna say, mentally, you kind of said this changed how your feelings on wanting to have a child. And like what beyond like the physicality of it, what mentally changed?
Well, I think this is both mental and physical, but like I am like scared to get pregnant again. Like it's like,
it's traumatizing, yeah, right? So I'm it's like a trigger.
It's
pregnancy's
like
a
you
trigger.
Touch the fire, it hurts. I don't want to touch it again. Like,
right. Okay.
I was miserable pregnant for 3 months and I went through this traumatic experience. I'm like, that could happen again. Like, I don't know. So I'm dealing with that. Obviously, okay. That won't, like, I won't let that stop me, but it's right. Making me hesitant.
Sure.
And then also, I was about to take on this extreme change of my life forever and ever. And I think now I'm like, whoa. I'm realizing what that really meant.
Right.
And, like, maybe I need a little more time. I don't know. Yeah. But that's what I'm going through. And I'm not...
You just want the dust to settle from that to see where you land.
Yeah. And like I'm experiencing new things and like I'm using the trauma to like to propel me in different ways in life.
Yeah. And if your friends are having children, too, like you can experience like what it was. You can watch them bloom. Like what does motherhood look like with this particular person that I'm friends with? And you can kind of witness it and maybe connect with various aspects that you didn't know before. You know? So, yeah.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes, Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
I want to get your guys' opinion on this because this was a very interesting moment in my life and career. So I've been working on stand-up about my miscarriage. And one of my dreams was to do a late night set and like have my miscarriage material be in there and just kind of be like, you know what? We don't talk about this enough. Like that's
yeah.
And also like I grew up like loving Mel Brooks and his whole thing was like, we make comedy out of tragedy.
Of course.
Like that's just who I am. And
laughing at something is so healing.
It's just being a Jew and too.
And you're helping others.
Exactly. So I had my publicist, I had her submit me to do stand up on a show. And I just said, you know, hey, will you just give the person who's going to listen to the set a heads up that there's the subject of miscarriage? And she comes back to me and she says, so that person said that they don't think miscarriages are funny and that they don't want to hear the tape anymore. And that...
Was it a man?
Yes.
Of course it was. Yeah.
And that really threw me for a loop. I was like, whoa, I was so naive. Like, I thought that I was just
gonna... Comedy is dark, you stupid fucks.
I thought I was, like, at least going to get the chance to, like, be heard, but they wouldn't even listen to the submission. And it...
You should call Whitney Cummings and Olivia Munn. That is fucked.
I didn't know how well connected you were.
Crazy.
Thanks, Conan. I appreciate it. No, that's wow.
I love how long you've been in the entertainment business and how naive you still are to how terrible it is.
Oh,
because,
me?
No, her. Oh. Because you literally started the story and I go, oh, yeah, she's. I know how the story's going to end with the first word out of your mouth that they're going to be like, nope.
But so my question is like, Am I crazy?
No. And what I would
you're
do
right,
is,
but
I would
not
take
ready.
One of your jokes and I would put a billboard out. Put a billboard out and do the whole thing like a tweet, like a framed tweet, have your picture on it and talk about it. Get a miscarriage hashtag or like what would have named the kid? Something. And then that's what I would have done because I'm like, oh, you don't want to hear it? Okay, everyone in Los Angeles will then. Thank you. Network TV is like listening to terrestrial radio in Nebraska. And by that, I mean you'll be in Nebraska and you'll be driving through and you'll hear a song that's on their top 40 radio that you literally was a hit in New York and LA like 3 years ago.
Yep.
And it's just getting to them.
Yeah.
So because late night is sets are done on network TV.
It's archaic form for comedy.
They're just what they're talking about is just so far behind. That's why late night shows aren't funny. Like, you know, that's why monologues aren't edgy or good anymore.
Right. It's why the hosts are generic. In
everyone
you know,
can't
mostly.
Handle it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It really like I was, like I said, naive, shocked.
Sure.
Do I calm down? Do I write him a letter and say like why I think this is important to like because part of the reason for like. The taboo is there because we don't talk about it.
Exactly.
You're 100% in the right.
Corinne's going to have a real good...
There's no...
I don't know. Because I'm too angry to think of a good idea right now.
And so the reason you specifically want it on network TV is because that's the people who wouldn't get this comedy normally. Is that correct?
That's certainly part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just this vision of like...
It's groundbreaking.
I'm going to... Thank you for saying that.
It is.
That's too much of a compliment.
Well, it's
but
groundbreaking
I'll receive it.
And it's helpful. And it's healing. It's so many things. And it is the epitome of what stand-up comedy can do. It's like exactly what you said with Mel Brooks. Taking something that's so tragic and all those feelings, all the things that you experience through that process, and you're flipping it on its head. You're in control. And you're saying, laugh with me about this. Because this is an experience that a lot of people have.
That was my goal. It's like, I want to normalize this. I want other women who've had this happen to be like, I can laugh too. It's like, I don't know. I still don't know what my next move is, but I'm pissed off.
Why? Yeah. So why did you reach out to any other late night bookers?
I did. And I know that they had said that they definitely would listen.
Mm-hmm.
But I put a pin in the idea because I was like, I really wanted to target that one that I wanted. Do I write them a letter and continue to pursue it? Do I go elsewhere? I just haven't really.
Right.
I think
you want to let them know.
Is good.
You want to let them know. You know what I mean? You want to fucking, but respectfully, like that's always the best. Like it's
I think that it's not a fuck you here because a fuck you isn't going to win. It's not going to get the outcome that you want. Mm. And I think like you really do have a real reason. And like, this is not, you're not just doing it. You're not writing the letter saying fuck you because you're being a brat and you didn't get your way.
Right.
You have a reason. You think it's important. And I certainly agree with you. And I mean, that doesn't mean anything.
And again,
both of these stories,
these people are admitting things. I'm like, I'm honestly surprised that they're this honest. They're this fucking honest with you. I'm like, you couldn't have just lied and said this doesn't fit the fucking show. But you know what? I'm glad they were honest with you because it's like, this is the fucking problem in society, man.
I love that you're not surprised.
No,
I am. People
that's why I'll always be sad.
Like, people letting me down will never surprise me, or people not being ready for something that I've been ready for 5, 10, 15 years will never surprise me. There's very little surprises me, especially in this business. I have very negative feelings towards the entertainment business, though. And so that's
why.
I also love it more than anything, but I hate it more than anything. So I'm very conflicted. But I think just, you can, why don't you use cancel culture, but not in a negative way? So you have such a big audience. You have a podcast. You have so many fans who love you. And I've seen you do this Miscarriage Material live. I fucking loved it.
Thank you.
It was so good. I was laughing my ass off at Gramercy Theater. So I think, you know, have a conversation on Trash Tuesday about how important this is and the kind of material you're doing and the same reasoning that you're giving us, and start some kind of hashtag and let people support you online the same way that people get things off the air.
Right.
Why can't we spin cancel culture and get things on the air?
Right. Oh my. See,
look at your brain.
Look at her not getting her getting in her way because she don't have it because she's just plain smart.
You have the power, and as creatives, that's why I kind of was speaking about with us releasing our own special.
Yeah.
We have the power now as creatives, and you know, our agents and managers are never going to tell us that because then they're out of a job.
Uh-huh.
But we have the power. We have the following. We get things done. The same way you got that, you know, fetus sucked out of you.
Yeah.
You
are resourceful.
The material about that. So let's use that resourcefulness. On the air, Esther. Yeah. You have the power.
Yes.
And I think we forget that. We are.
We do.
Your agents and managers, you don't work for them. They work for you.
They work for you. I know. I got to remind myself of that.
Yeah.
All the time.
You have the power.
And you own the restaurant. They help you run it.
And you have a following. And I've seen firsthand that really loves you and really cares about you. And that, even not every famous person has, you know, even if they have a large following,
it's for a role.
There
they
are
a role
people who have like more specific. So it's just like, you know, Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Justin Bieber. Mm-hmm. Those are celebrities who have following, who really care about them. And every celebrity doesn't have that loyalty, but you have it and I've seen it. So use it. And it's also a wonderful opportunity to say, like, we use social media and rallying the masses for such negative things, to get people fired from SNL, and we tell ourselves it's to provide positive moral change and social change, and I really don't think
you
it
can't,
is.
If you believe somebody is bullying others, to bully them is not going to work. Yeah, it's not an effective method.
It's not. That's just a bunch of people who got made fun of in high school who are like, we're finally excelling. No, you're not. You're still a fucking loser. Everyone knows it.
Shout out, Seth.
Totally agree.
So, so you have the power, and I really think sometimes like we forget how many people love us and how many people, and don't turn a negative, don't attack this guy, but just say people want to hear this, and I have proof that they want to hear this.
Yes.
Wow, I love that.
Yes.
You know, this,
I'm excited for
yes,
you. Like,
Corinne,
I'm
invested. I am excited for you too.
And I think other people, especially other women, will get invested. And I haven't even had a miscarriage, and I'm invested in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, because we all understand what it's like to be shut down because of a topic is too controversial. And what they really mean is it's a woman centered topic and you don't want to fucking hear about it.
I know. In
Fuck
my head,
you.
It was like,
you have sex with women. You should not be like, stop. Like, stop.
I was like, I wonder if there's ever been stand up of like a man talking about prostate cancer. Like, is
100%.
That?
100%. There's definitely been a late night set about that. There's definitely been a late night set about a prostate exam, about testicular cancer, about something that a man goes through.
Yeah. But this brings me to, though, like why I looked at you guys and like have so much respect for you guys.
Thanks.
Because your savviness in this industry of making this show, of releasing your own special, of doing the touring the way you guys did, like, I just see you and like have the respect for the hustle and the game changing that you guys do.
Thanks.
Like, I always see it and I always think it and I don't say it enough, but like, I want to buy what you're selling. I'm in.
Thanks.
I want to be in like
what if I got the Square app out and I was like, we'll charge you right here.
Pretty money in your mouth is girl.
Like, I want this like powerful business girl club that you guys like that's what I view you guys as, that I'm like, let me in, I'm in it with you,
right? That's, and that's why I get so upset when women think that we're not on your team. I go, no, I'm being mean to you because there's so much more out there for you,
right?
And I'm not gonna fucking enable you to receive
or watch you sell yourself short when you don't have to. It's hard to remember that
sure.
It's hard to remember you are in control. You are, at the end of the day, you are always in control, and I think it's worth reminding yourself of that multiple times a day.
But
it's so easy to forget.
I'm so excited. I'm already like, because there is
plan and scheming.
The manager in me never left. So anytime I think of a good idea, I go, how are we going to make this happen? How are we going to get Esther Pavitsky on the late night television show?
Talking about a miscarriage.
Talking about this
miscarriage. We got to get Esther's miscarriage jokes out to the late night masses. And we're going to do it.
And the hashtag has to be like edgy and funny.
And it's like uncomfortably honest.
Yeah.
Because that's what people, that's why I love stand-up comedy. I love when I hear stand-up comedy that makes me go, or that makes me think, that makes me go, am I okay with that? That makes me interrogate myself and what I'm comfortable with thinking and talking about. And so that is at its highest peak, what's the power of stand-up, which is pretty big power. So,
I totally agree. I like being challenged when I'm watching things and learning and laughing. And I admire my podcast co-hosts because they are so open about like traumatic things that happened to them, being molested and stuff. And I see how that has had such a positive impact on people. And I'm sure you guys like,
well, if we don't laugh, we'll cry. And crying's fine too, but it's like, you just, either way, you got to talk about it.
Well, and when you talked about your miscarriage on Trash Tuesday, I didn't listen to the episode, but I saw on social media, like it had brought up, and then you were mentioning so people had like a positive response to it.
Well, so what happened was, is I have been, you know, everyone in my life has known about it for, you know, whatever, 8 months now. And so I'll casually make jokes, and we would cut them out because we were like, oh, maybe people aren't ready, whatever. And then we left one in. And I realized, like, oh, people are like, what's going on? Like, a lot of people are like, did I miss that? So it was like, hey, sorry to spring that on you without any explanation. But yeah.
Even the way you're thinking about it now. So you're like, I don't know.
You're thinking about it the way that Booker's thinking about it.
I don't know if people are ready to talk about my miscarriage. It's your experience.
It's yours. They don't tell you what you can talk about. Nobody, even your fans who adore you, which they wouldn't anyway, but like no one tells you what you can joke about, right? And so that's why these feelings are so important to you, and that's why you have this fire in you to get it out to the masses, because you know how important it is. So that's why with trigger warnings, I feel torn about them, because I understand the psychology behind getting triggered and having something really traumatic experience, and then something like a guy in a blue sweater makes you relive that. But we can't put all the blue sweaters away, you know what I'm saying? So it's like going at it with this attitude when you're talking about rape, when you're talking about molestation, pedophilia, miscarriage, abortion. These are really heavy topics, but if you just talk about it, then other people that think they're going to get triggered about it can realize, oh, I can handle this too.
I love that so much. Wow, that is powerful, because I have done a lot of thinking about, well, I'll say trigger culture.
As a comics, it's something to think about. We get held to higher standards than politicians, so it makes you rethink what you say. Not even that getting canceled, but also like, you know, I don't want to send somebody down this rabbit hole of sadness, right?
I feel like for our age range, it's like newer for us. Like when we were younger, there was no like, so I'm learning it, but I'll say this, like, I always remember the story of Demi Lovato. Like they said like skinny girl chocolate in her froyo shop, and she was like,
I'm very well aware of that story.
She got really triggered. Yep. She blew up the froyo shop. You, blah blah blah. You triggered me.
Yes.
Oh. I always go back to that. I always think about that, and I'm like, why? I know she's wrong. I don't know why. Now,
I like that you're looking at it like Greek mythology. Like there's a lesson to learn here.
And then I realized it through this experience of like, oh, you know what? My three close girlfriends all had their babies and they're beautiful and I'm so happy for them and I love them. But sometimes it's a little triggering.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Sometimes it's like,
of course it is.
Sometimes it's like, oh my God, everybody had their baby except for me. Oh no.
Sure.
Yeah.
But.
And those are the moments you have to be there for yourself. Really be there for yourself.
But you know what I don't do? fuck you. You hide your baby from me. Fuck you. Like, yeah. It's up to me.
You
to
can
handle.
Live your life without me breaking down over it.
Yeah. Esther's coming over. Put your babies away.
Guys, can you just pretend you don't have a baby really quick? I'm going to stop by.
Like, and
but yeah, you're
mind,
right.
Mind you, it's a tiny part. And I'm so like, but I'm like, it's up to course. Me. I don't get to tell my friends, hey, your baby's like.
Yes. So that's why like cancel culture has gotten out of hand where it's like this word made me feel uncomfortable or this thing. And it's like, okay, stop. Like I had never heard that Demi Lovato story, the skinny, but I'm like,
really?
Yeah. But so she got triggered because of
she's
flavor
not obsessed
of ice cream
with pop culture the way you and I are, but yeah.
And I don't have a TV and I don't
she
really
went into an ice cream shop and like one of the flavors was like a low calorie flavor. And there's also like whatever the dietary needs for that ice cream flavor were, like there's more than one reason why someone would need that. Like you could be diabetic, you could have
like sugar free
gluten intolerance. Right. Yeah. It's not just about caloric, but
right.
because Demi has struggled with her weight very publicly,
right.
and people, yes, have been very, very vicious
disgusting
to Demi
to her,
about
sure.
her weight, and I know that,
right?
But also, people have been shitty to me about my weight.
Yeah,
I love ice but cream, still, and I'm not getting low calorie, and it shows. Fuck you.
So she got upset. So, but to me, that says, and I don't, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but she was taking her inner pain that
yes.
maybe other people put on her that were, if you're that famous, getting dragged on the internet for what your fucking body looks like. Are you fucking kidding me? And she was, she was taking that pain and throwing it at the ice cream shop.
Oh,
when
and also,
really, it's celebrity culture. It's fucking paparazzi. It's let's just bully people on the internet so we could sell ads, we could get clickbait. So the pain was real, but it was just misplaced.
And also, I just want to go back yes. before we get canceled. Her pronouns, their pronouns are they, them.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that. Thank you.
We fucked up the whole thing. So,
but you know what? We're trying, and
I just remembered that. But I mean, like, there's always so much going on with Demi. You know?
And no disrespect. Like, I think that since that happened, they came forward and said that, you know, they were struggling with mental health and addiction.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it, but I do like, I go to it because it's like such a famous example to me
yes.
of like how I'm processing my own things that trigger me and how I can handle them myself.
Right. Yeah, you can. You really can. It's hard, but you really can. And people will get triggered for various ways throughout their whole life. And maybe new triggers will come and go. Maybe they'll go away. But it's exhausting to think about, am I going to trigger anybody with anything I say? You can't
yeah.
live your life that way.
And I think, and I do also try to say, okay, maybe there's something positive that we're at least paying attention to this. Because, you know, freaking in the 1950s, I'm sure they did horrible things to women and women just had to be like, oh, that's perfect.
We're very happy with that, actually.
So,
yeah.
like, I think maybe right. we'll level out and
sure.
balance and
we'll, we will.
Yeah.
We will.
Or
we
the
will.
Planet will explode. Either way, we're trying.
Yeah.
Well,
and that counts.
And I think my problem with trigger warnings are mostly that they're setting us up for failure.
Yeah.
Because they're not
I get
foolproof.
A lot.
You're never,
and I need to learn how to handle it.
Yeah, you're like that's kind of like the thing. Like you're never going to be able to take away all the triggers. And so, but as there are less of them, we learn how to handle them less.
Yeah.
We don't expect
you're right.
them.
And a trigger warning sometimes to me feels like you're taking away personal responsibility from the listener, in a beautiful personal responsibility of like, I am in charge of my own healing and my own mind and my own heart, and I'm in charge of nurturing myself when certain things pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Hell yeah. Changing the world, baby cakes.
The three women in our 30s
yeah.
just growing, evolving.
Living it up.
Miscarrying.
Fucking doing what makes us happy.
God, I'm just gonna be thinking of the perfect hashtag
yeah.
now for like
she's,
months.
And she will think of one that you're gonna go, oh fuck yeah. off, Corinne, that's brilliant. Oh,
I believe that.
I'll need more details off the air. But
how? Now this is a question that how long or is I don't know if this was a factor, if this is something you thought about, but when you get a procedure, a surgical procedure to have the miscarriage, have that tissue taken out of your body, when do you feel sexy again? Like, is it right away? Is it a journey? Is it a relationship that goes up and down? Like,
I didn't come up for me, like feeling unsexy
or like uncomfortable with sex, I guess is really what it
is. I never felt uncomfortable with sex after that. I think I just was like, oh, I was pregnant for 3 months for no reason. And now I'm like, I've gained weight and I'm like, ugh, I just don't feel, you know, you
right.
just like you're bloated for a little while.
Mm.
But it never made me like question my sexiness.
Okay. So you still felt safe, like I guess emotionally safe, like I don't know. Like, did you, was sex a trigger after that, really?
No, not at all. Awesome. No.
In what ways did your body change? Because I'm always, that's something they like to hide from people.
I know.
From women to trick us. To keep us into having babies. And I go, I mean, ultimately, we have the power. If we want to stop the human race, we can. And like, God, does that feel good?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy that all the wars were started by men. Crazy.
I mean, the more you keep fucking with us, it's like, because people are already getting agitated by that because new, like, Gen Z and like millennials, like we're having less kids than before. So we're already shutting it down. So keep testing us.
Yeah.
Keep testing
we'll
us.
We'll close the vaginas for good.
It'll be done.
We'll fucking adopt and close up.
I love that.
Closing up shop here, everybody.
Yep.
The world is done.
I feel like I didn't have any of the, I never got to the place where like there's irreversible body changes. Like I think I just like put on some weight.
I love that as like just a mom-to-be book called Irreversible Body Changes. Please that's write that
the
up,
natural
Esther.
Birth control.
Please write
that's
that up.
Funny. That's the hashtag. I haven't experienced my pregnant friends, my friends who had their babies have struggled with that, but I haven't had that.
Does that
yet.
Make you feel a little bit good?
It's okay. You can be honest. I you gotta take joy where you can eye. Get it, Esther.
It makes me feel like I...
Say it. You're like better than them.
I'm just gonna wait. I'm gonna wait and see how I feel the next time.
Wow, you can run for office. That was a great answer.
The next time I'm ovulating, I might not for sure do that again. Right. I don't know.
That's so funny. And your partner's response to this is so important. And I think a lot of, especially men, what a surprise, mishandle it. So did Dave do anything like positive or negative in helping you deal with this?
He was just, he's just always great, supportive, and he had a hard time. Like, and I even talked in my stand about it. Like, I think he took it harder than me, and I think that's because we're women in our 30s, and we know literally so many women who've had miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So I kind of
you're right. That's a good point.
I kind
the men
of
don't
knew
really know as much
to be prepared. But even if you know to be prepared, you're never prepared.
Right,
it still stings very hard. But he was very shocked. In a way that, like, I think it made it harder for him. But
so there's grief and mourning, of course.
And you forget, like, men should also have this information, too.
Yeah,
because then when you're as a couple experiencing it, you're on different levels with it already because you are carrying it. That's another category of differences. But, men don't. I never hear men talking to their bros about, like, oh, my girl had a miscarriage and it fucking sucked. Like, you don't hear about it.
And did your body tell you at all? Like, I know sometimes people feel like they're like, oh, I knew something was like off.
Nothing.
You didn't know at all. Okay.
Nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Damn.
I was just really bloated. And I'm quite heavier in Dollface season 2 than I was in season 1 because I was 3 months pregnant right when we started.
Can I ask about this? The entertainment industry.
Yeah.
So you don't tell them that you're pregnant until that 3 week or that 3 month mark?
That was basically kind of the advice I was given.
Yeah,
but
makes sense.
I am the, when it comes to me and my life, I'm the biggest blabbermouth you've ever met. So it was like so hard. I wanted to tell everyone, but because I was like, fuck, like they have to shoot around this.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
Did the costume designer, like you didn't even, did you tell the costume designer?
Cause no,
like,
no, no.
They were just like.
And no one. I think I said when I came, because by the time we started shooting, it was right after I had the surgery.
Oh, okay.
So I think I was like, so just so you guys know, I'm a little heavier right now. Just had the miscarriage.
What a weird part of the job, huh? Like being in TV where you got to say that.
So
like what an odd phone call.
I was like, fingers crossed, I'll get some of this baby weight off before the season ends and my size will change, which is like, I know that's like unhealthy to talk about weight. Whatever, but
it's the reality of your occupation.
I wanted to get the useless baby weight off. Right. I think that's fair.
I think emphasis on the useless, just really
right. Of no use, not going anywhere. See you later.
Wait, and then you talked. Okay, so I don't know if we talked about this last time you were on because it was several years ago. But this, I want to go back to this Bella Vita eating disorder camp.
Wait, I just thought of a hashtag, possibly trash tissue.
Sorry.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. That's good.
So
good.
I just had to say it all over.
Aligns with the podcast.
Right, synergy. Right. Yeah. There's like branding in it.
I like that.
Friends taught me well. Okay.
Baron for my name. That's another.
Okay.
Hashtag Baron for my name. Hashtag trash tissue.
Okay. We've got some creative geniuses amongst us.
These are getting fucking
bleak.
Wait.
We got to start a marketing company, Corinne. Can you imagine? It's just a gym for our minds coming up with this shit. So fun.
Okay.
Sorry, what were we talking about? Okay.
Sorry. Eating disorders. I feel so bad. Dude, am I like just come on here with the most depressing
topics?
No,
this is life.
Our listeners live for this. This is what we do on this show.
I'm just now realizing like life is hard and sad a lot of the time.
Totally.
So we just got to help each other through it by talking about it.
Yeah. And then it's also happy too.
It is. Right.
But yeah, so I struggled with binge eating like since I was, you know, probably high school is when I like realized that my behavior was inappropriate with food.
Right. Was it purging or just binging?
No purging.
Okay.
Only binging.
Describe binge eating.
Binge eating, it's like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm feeling right now, but I have to eat all the food that's in front of me or I feel like I'm going to die. Like, it's just like, I can't.
There's a sense of urgency around the eating.
It would be like, I'd go on a date with my high school boyfriend and I'd come home and I'd go in my parents' basement and eat like four bowls of cereal.
I see. Okay.
You just can't. And so
every meal is like a buffet.
There's a driving force behind the hunger that has nothing to do with actually, you know, hunger in your body in terms of nutrients. It's emotional, right?
That's what you think. But then part of what I learned when I went to this place was like, well, what I was doing, because it all comes from like body image issues, right? Because I was like, I'm so fat, like I don't eat. So it was like what the most common cycle of binge eating is like what the nutritionist at the program said. It's like a pendulum. It's like, so you try to do good, you try to have perfect eating days, and like you try to skip meals, and then your body is, so it's like, and I would always hear my girlfriend say like, I can do really good with my diet during the day, but once night falls, I go crazy. And it's like, well, that's happening for a reason. It's like, you try to do perfect eating, don't eat too much. You're starving.
Yeah.
You starved yourself. And now your body is saying, oh, give me all the food. So that was like the cycle that I was in. And it got really, really bad in college. I mean, I probably gained like over 30 pounds, which I'm 5 feet tall. Like that's a lot.
Yes.
And by the way, the weight gain, even though that's the humiliating and embarrassing and sad part that I felt, it's really just like sad that that's your lifestyle, that you're like, there's so much shame and it's so embarrassing. And that's ultimately why I never tried, I think, why I had never tried drugs or alcohol. Cause I was like, the way I am with food, like I just can't afford to, I'll be an alcoholic, you know,
right.
Like it's, I was coping with food.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't. And then when I moved to LA, I was busy and I was better and my mind was on something else. And then of course everything creeps back in. I started going to OA, Overeaters Anonymous, and those meetings didn't quite work for me because I found them, they would like trigger me to eat more. So I was like, this isn't working for me. Like hearing about other people's stories, didn't work. And then finally, it was when Dave was out of town, I noticed like I was alone. And so I was engaging in those behaviors. And I was like, this is bad. I just got health insurance for the first time. I was like, I grabbed my health insurance card. I'm like, I know this is bad. My behavior is bad. I called the back of the card. I was like, are there centers for this?
Oh, wow.
And they were like, here's some places. And I researched them and I just called that place. And I was like, hey, I need to come here. And like, and then that was like intensive therapy. It gave me the coping tools. It made me learn why I was doing it. And
yeah.
And it's not like I'm cured and perfect. Like, and everyone, like I overeat like a normal person, and that's part of what they teach you there. Like, it's okay to overeat sometimes. Like, that's not binge eating.
Right.
So that's like, that changed my life probably more than any experience I've ever had.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it was like me and like, it was like, there was like cool teens there too.
Oh, that's fun.
They were so cool.
Wait, it was Euphoria and Esther. Oh my God. I love that.
That's adorable. That's great. Well, I think we all struggle with something, whether it's food or a substance or a personality trait or a hobby or like a bad habit or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Overworking yourself, putting too much on your plate. Like, yeah, we all have, you know. And it feels like, you know, it is something that, because I remember when I went to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, they were like, this is something you have to deal with for the rest of your life. And I'm like, I don't want to think of it that way. But really what it is you're always going to have these cravings to go back to the thing. You just have to be there for yourself when you have them and not continue to numb out, continue to disassociate, continue to like divorce your body and mind.
Yeah. Like I identify as an addict because I feel like I have those behaviors, and like, I'm like, that's okay. Like that doesn't mean I'm working on, you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to do bad things all the time, but like I might want to,
right? And that's okay. Ooh, I might want to get a little naughty on a Tuesday.
And on that note, where can we find you, Esther? What do you want people to see, listen to?
People can check out Trash Tuesday, our podcast. It's primarily on YouTube and everywhere you listen to podcasts. You guys, please come to LA and do it sometime.
Yes, we are. Yes.
We're going to be in LA in a couple weeks. Month, so I was going to...
Yes. That's happening then.
Yay!
And Dollface season 2. I think people will like it. There's a lot... my storyline in this season is a lot to do with anxiety, and I'm really grateful for that because that's a whole other experience we'll talk about next time. Mm.
And this is old, and I'm sure Esther doesn't want to promote this. or is not concentrating on it, but you guys know it's well documented how much I loved Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I was talking about it for a week.
She loves it. Yeah,
I've been using television as grief counseling, and so Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was the first show. I've now moved on to Gilmore Girls, but Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was very, very helpful. And Esther has a great role in that series. So if you want to enjoy more Esther, I highly recommend that as well. And I'm just really trying to sell that show to people. I don't know why. There's no reason. I have no investment.
It's art that you believe in.
I just liked it.
Yeah, we all need more art that speaks to us.
And I don't like a lot of TV shows. I think that's the issue. This has been Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. We will talk to you next Friday.
Woo!
Bye. Guys We Fucked is presented by Luminary.
Created and hosted by Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson.
Editing and music coordination by Mike Coscarelli. Theme song by Rob Patterson and Jake Kozen.
Suck my wet ass pussy.
Christina said to cut that before, but now it's in there.
Yeah, let's keep it. Who cares?
It's like I finally get to see how my life would be if you were close to me. When I'm with you, the sun is shining, and if it rains, it's fine with me. But when we say goodbye, feel the pain when a piece of my soul stays in New York when I'm on a plane. I'm going home, but home isn't home. 1,000 miles away, 1,000 miles.
going home, but home isn't home. A thousand miles away, a thousand miles away.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.